Hi there and welcome along to this week's Racing Postcast. It's Monday the 9th of August. I'm Maddie Playle and this week's guests are Chris Cook, who's having his first go on this particular Racing Postcast, and Mark Boylan, who is somewhat of a veteran of these shows. So what's coming up then for you in the next half an hour or so? We're going to have a look back on the Shergar Cup. It was one of those sort of quiet, traditionally quiet anyway, weekends in racing, but we still also have two Group 1s to look back on in the Phoenix Stakes and the Prix Maurice de Geest, as well as another one in the Grosse Prix von Berlin, which was won by a British representative in Alpinista. So too, we were represented in the Saratoga Derby, or at least Joseph O'Brien was, and he came home with the prize. Coming up this weekend, we have the Jacques Le Marois to look forward to, where we'll hopefully see Palace Pier attempt to win back-to-back renewals. First up then, let's talk about the Shergar Cup. It was won by the girls' team and Nicola Curry received the silver saddle. Chris, I want to talk to you about this first off, because you have some quite positive feedback on the Shergar Cup as an overall event, because it seems to be something that's a little bit like Marmite to a lot of people in racing, but you're firmly in favour.
Yeah, I think Marmite is right. Most people, as we know, who are sort of traditional racing fans, it's almost like a point of principle with them that they can't get on board with it. You know, they go, oh, team concept, silly, team tactics, wrong, bad. You know, this is not for me. And I guess it isn't aimed at people who are already converted. It's just a slightly different thing. You could think of it as a sort of frothy bit of halftime entertainment in midway between Glorious Goodwood and the Ebor meeting at York. I think, you know, there absolutely must be a space for stuff like this. If anything, we should be doing a little bit more in the way of experimental different things. And the Shergar Cup has stood the test of time. You know, it's been around for, in its present format, about 14 years now, I think. And it gets a really good crowd at Ascot. And, you know, I wasn't an initial convert. In fact, to be honest, I was as skeptical as anyone else to begin with. But I kept getting sent along by the Guardian because, you know, there was a more senior guy who was always on holiday at this time of year. So I got stuck with it. And, you know, over time, you come to really enjoy it. Maybe people will say I've got Stockholm syndrome. But, you know, it's a great way to see jockeys you don't normally see. And I find it very interesting that you've got jockeys riding horses they don't normally ride. The tactics become sort of more interesting, more easier to analyse, I think, at the Shergar Cup because, you know, people are trying different things or they're not necessarily in full control. You can see things sort of visibly going wrong in a way that isn't normally quite so obvious. And it can be a fruitful source of, you know, beaten horses that are worth looking out for next time.
And mentioning beaten horses, you've got a couple for us that you think it could pay to follow.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm a fan of Magical Spirit anyway, because he obviously won the Air Silver Cup last year, you know, fairly readily in the end, and has had a sort of quiet time since, you know, only a few pounds higher than he was that day, finishing really strongly in that first race on Saturday at the Shergar Cup. Finished third, but would have won in maybe another stride and a half. I think he's going to probably end up in the Silver Cup again here next month. And, you know, it might be sailing a little bit under some people's radar again, having been beaten every run since last year. Worth looking out for anyway, wherever he washes up. Then, you know, the Island Brave, obviously, no spring chicken, been around for a very long time. He's run another good race in fourth in the Shergar Cup Stairs. It was a race where they'd gone a real steady pace on Saturday to the benefit of Nicola Curry. I thought really Call My Bluff should have won that if he'd got going just a little bit earlier. But sort of Island Brave was sticking on well from the back. Hasn't won for, you know, a real long time. But you could see him running a big race at a big price in a race like the Cesarevich. I think he's rated high enough to get into that. And he ran well at Royal Ascot, came very wide under a £7 claimer, finished third in the Northumberland Plate, but got demoted for causing interference. You know, he's one of those that I think he's got a big prize in him somewhere.
Okay, so two for your tracker there in Magical Spirit and Island Brave. And the discussion around the Racing League, talking of team competitions, of course, rolls on. Mark, we'll go to you first. What's your view on the racing league? Team Ireland appeared to have hit some form in the latest meeting.
Yeah, like to be quite honest, I'd echo similar views to Chris. This isn't something that, in terms of the Shergar Cup, the Shergar Cup doesn't particularly light my fire from a punting point of view, from a spectating point of view, but it does appeal to a certain audience. And even, you know, there's people there that I've met this weekend, I should say, you know, who wouldn't particularly watch racing, but, you know, it's easy enough to follow from a team point of view, that the points total, it's something very straightforward that people can understand. And if the Racing League is trying to develop something similar along the lines of a structure that people can follow, or, you know, colours that are identifiable, I have nothing against that. I think in racing, sometimes, while we can be right to be cautious about things and right to ask the questions that need to be asked of certain things, I think there is a general, you know, pessimism around anything that new that comes about that's packaged in a certain way. And I think a little bit of an open mind to give this a chance. Ultimately, it's new prize money coming into the pool. As I watched the first evening of it. I think probably the starting off the Racing League in the same week as Goodwood and Galway was a very, very tricky starting point from getting an audience from straight away. It was hard to flick between, you know, the last few races at Galway, from my point of view, for example, to go back and forth. But I had nothing to object to what I saw. And if it was to appeal to someone, fair enough. Time is going to be the real, you know, we get to understand what the outcome is of it in terms of whether it has been a success or not. But anything that drives in prize money initially, as it has done, and, you know, we can assess it afterwards. I think it's too early to make a full call on it. But this is the sort of thing that does appeal to a certain group of people. So I think you have to give it a chance before you totally condemn, regardless of what your feelings are on it.
You're being far too patient for a racing fan there, I think. But Chris, something that we spoke about before we came on air was about the fact that the teams don't have much identity and really want to connect with the particular teams in the racing league.
I mean, yeah, as Mark says, we give it time. It's only been 2 weeks. But I do find that it wasn't particularly easy to sort of identify with any one of the teams, you know. I think team concepts in horse racing anyway, you know, probably people are going to have a very loose affiliation at best with any of them. The exception might be the women's team at the Shergar Cup, because, you know, people, for whatever reason, they just love to see the women sort of punching above their weight, as it were. But yeah, I haven't yet quite got a handle on the teams for the Racing League, I have to say. I think it could have been made easier for us to pick one of them, go, oh, that'll be my team then. I mean, if they'd sort of tied them all to obvious regions or training centres, you know, that might have made them a little bit more accessible. But the, you know, the prize money is excellent, and the racing is really interesting and quite good betting fodder, judged by Doncaster Thursday night. I had quite a fun time watching that. So, you know, let's give it a chance. The Shergar Cup certainly went through a few different incarnations before it settled on the formula that is undoubtedly working for it now. So 2 weeks into the Racing League is very early stages to be judging it.
Indeed. Let's go over to talk about the action on track then. And in particular, on Sunday, we had the Keeneland Phoenix Stakes, the Group 1. It was won by an English raider in Ebro River under Shane Foley, who was, of course, just coming back from Saratoga. More of that in a little while. Trained by Hugo Palmer, this horse won after a change of tactics. He's quite an interesting horse, this. Quirky, or maybe a little bit misunderstood. What was your view of the race, Mark?
I thought it was a good performance, and I think that the difference between winning and losing potentially was Shane Foley bagging that standside rail. If you watch the racing all day long at the Curragh, particularly in those sprint races, having that, or even just coming towards that rail, was a massive benefit. And I think from that perspective, you can look at the run of Castle Star, who probably would have liked a little bit cover for a little bit longer, I should say. You know, he was probably out in the open on the less favoured side, and I definitely give him another chance of reversing the form with Go Bears Go, who I thought probably had every chance, but has been kept busy, and maybe just freshening up might suit him, I'm not quite sure. I thought it was a solid run without having any obvious excuses. But Ebro River, it's funny, I spoke to Hugo Palmer for the preview for this race on Friday. I spoke to him, and you know yourself, sometimes when you're talking to trainers, there's maybe things that are a little bit not totally spectacular, so to speak. But I thought his theory for running the horse was very clever, in the sense that he said Go Bears Go was beaten by Perfect Power in the Norfolk. I think there was a neck between them, or a head between them, and Ebro River had then beaten Perfect Power by a neck at Goodwood, and he was just basically saying,
if we're viewing the Railway Stakes as the key piece of form going into this race, we surely have to be bang there. And the weather forecast, obviously, he got no problem on that ground either. So I think it was a mix of, it was kind of a perfect storm for Ebro River where lots fell into place. And I think Shane Foley got a right tune out of him now. You know, Shane's riding style, I think that really, it galvanised the horse in all the right ways. And I'd be very, very positive about him if we got easy ground again in another sort of group race. I'm not saying he's totally ground dependent, but I do think he's a much better horse when it might slow others down, so to speak. But it doesn't bother him in any way. He's a good, solid campaigner.
He is, and I love talking about him because some people have choice words to say about him, given that he's drifted left and right previously and he's not looked all that straightforward, but he's now a Group 1 winner. Shane Foley afterwards was hopeful that this horse would stay further with an eye to a three-year-old campaign, Chris, but interestingly, he's got an entry in the Nunthorpe, but I mean, that's unlikely to come off, I suspect, but it clearly shows what Hugo Palmer's thinking anyway.
Yeah, it does. I mean, now that he's a Group 1 winner as a juvenile, and he pretty buy a Guineas winner, you probably are minded to be a bit more conservative than that. You know, maybe if things hadn't gone so well yesterday, the Nunthorpe would have been the swashbuckling option for you. Yeah, he'd add several layers of interest if he turned up there. He's a really likable horse. I mean, I remember from the... back in May in his early races, you know, you could see what a bundle of talent he was. But he doesn't have find ways to trip himself up. I mean, even when he won the national stakes at Sandown, he was hanging, and I think he blew the start that day as well, and he can over race. I was very impressed with Shane Foley, how he sort of tackled each of those potential stumbling blocks in turn, and you know, he was very clear that the horse was just going to keep straight with him. I mean, in the closing stages there, he's got Dr. Zempf on one side and the rail on the other, but you know, nonetheless, I'm sure Ebro River would have found a way to lose if Shane had given him half an inch to do so. So
interestingly, you know, as well, he actually praised his attitude, saying he was very tough and genuine, so perhaps he's not all that bad.
Well, I think probably he is tough and genuine. I mean, he's, that's not been the problem. I've never seen him quitting in his races, but, you know, he just, sometimes he's been running out of puff because, you know, he's just, he's blown it through the first couple of furlongs. He's wandering off a true line. It's sort of a pity in a way that, you know, they're probably not going to be kept together Shane having other commitments and mostly riding in Ireland.
Where would you go next with Ebro River, can I ask? What would you be looking at the Guineas long term?
Well, being by Galileo Gold, I think, and of course, you know, that's such a special thing for Hugo Palmer. That was obviously his Guineas winner, his first classic winner. And then he's with one of his sons, he's gone and won a Group 1. I would think they have to be thinking, you know, let's get to the Guineas if we can. And so along the way, you've got to try seven furlongs, don't you? I mean, I suppose really he's got to be a Dewhurst candidate now, doesn't he? I would have thought they'll be trying to work out how they can get to that race in the best fashion. He's had quite a few races now. Is that seven that he's had? So, I mean, it might even be Dewhurst next.
It could be.
Hope for a bit of rain, you know, in the last week beforehand.
Talking about other Irish action, Mark, at Cork on Saturday, there was a performance which you wanted to touch upon in a Group 3.
Yeah, I'd have this down as the most impressive performance nearly of the weekend. Thought this was really, really good from Le Petit Coco. Unexposed sort of profile in terms of group racing up until Saturday. She had a couple of runs from Andrew Kinnearns and then switched to Paddy Toomey. Obviously, Paddy's strike rate, as we all know, is absolutely exceptional. And she beat Belle Image, who has gone on to be very, very decent indeed. Like, she's fourth in the Irish Guineas and fifth, only beaten, I think, a length and three quarters in the pre-Rothschild as well. Belle Image gave her a real beating down at Killarney. Second to Willow in a race then where she would have learned plenty, her first start in stakes company. Again, wins at Killarney. Paddy was just keen to give her experience. But this was just the culmination. This was her exploding, really, into what she kind of had always promised she might do. But I think after this, they have to be looking Group 1 targets. I know they've mentioned the potential of the Champion Fillies and Mares race at Ascot on Champions Day. The Prix Vermeille is there. He's mentioned the EP Taylor as a possibility. I think she's in the Blandford as well. just I think she's really, really exciting. I know there's plenty going on Saturday and it might have gone under the radar in some respects, but I'd encourage anyone to go back and watch La Petite Coco. Handles and ease in the ground, stays a mile and a half really well, just has an awful lot of quality about her. I'd be very, very excited about her with a view to some of those autumn group ones. Really exciting.
Fantastic. We're just going to take a quick pause now, but don't go anywhere because there's more Group 1 action to discuss in the shape of Sunday's Prix Maurice de Guise.
Members Club is the ultimate resource for racing enthusiasts and punters, brought to you by The Racing Post. Get access to The Racing Post digital newspaper every day from 9 p.m, plus exclusive content including expert tips, analysis, form study tools, and more. Head to racingpost.com and click subscribe to find out more.
Welcome back to the show. Now, as promised, we're going to discuss the win of Mariana Foot in the Prix Maurice de Guise for Mikel Barcelona and Jerome Reina. This six-year-old's got quite a remarkable story. This was his eighth consecutive win. He's won over a mile, 7 furlongs and 6 furlongs, and he beat a whole host of British representatives and indeed Irish representatives too. He beat Trobo first up, though, Andre Farb's filly. Starman was in third, the July Cup winner. Brando, what a hero that horse is, at 9 years old, was finishing fourth in this race after he won it a couple of years ago. Kinross only fifth, and then the Irish back down in seventh, eighth, and 11th. Campanelle was the big disappointment of the race after an incident at the start. What was your main takeaway from this, Chris? Because there were quite a lot of different stories to it.
It was. I mean, I was initially a little bit disappointed for Starman. I mean, I thought the ground at Dover probably wasn't going to be so soft as to mess things up for him. He didn't finish the race very strongly. I mean, maybe that extra half furlong, you know, on a sort of soggy surface, if you like, is what's done for him. But you know, the way that Mariana Foot came to him and went past, you know, it was deeply impressive. Back when Mariana Foot was Starman's age, he couldn't win Group 3 races. So you look at this and go, how is this possible? A six-year-old is, you know, suddenly up to doing so much better than in the past. But actually, if you look back, if you sort of blow the dust off the French form book from 2019, there's a race where he's very close to Polydream, who won this race, the Maurice de Guise, giving £3 to that one and only getting beat half a length. So, I mean, you could say that even in defeat in Group 3 company a couple of years back, he's showing a level of form that's worthy of Group 1 racing. And, of course, we know that with these sort of top-class sprinters, you know, they can sort of ovulate between Group 1s and Group 3 level, can't they? Jerome Reynier has done a great job. He's having this amazing breakthrough season with a couple of six-year-old Scaletti and Mariana Foot. And French racing has to be grateful because they're finding it hard to win their own top races. But he's gone and fended off the raiders.
Indeed. What do you make of the stuff to come out of Campanelle's run? Frankie Dettori saying that she wasn't ponied to the start. She nearly unseated him after coming out of the stalls and then came in last. Would you forgive her that?
Oh, completely. I mean, after about two strides, you know, you're going to put a line through that run. She's come out of the stalls like one of those rodeo bulls come out of the gates. You know, she's straight up in the air and down again and then hanging off to the side. And, you know, Frankie really did nearly come out of the saddle. If you backed her, then unfortunately your money gone at that stage. I'm surprised about the no ponying to the start, though. You'd think that even if that's not traditional practice in French racing, they would stretch a point for filly that's won a Group 1 at the same track a year ago.
Indeed. And Mark, let's touch upon some of the other runners. I mean, Brando is a superstar, isn't he, really? What a dream he must be to own. And then some of the Irish contingent, a little bit disappointing, would it be fair to say?
Ah, yeah, for sure. I think, you know, ultimately, Lope Fernandez, he's dependent on a good surface to see the best of him. Brando, God, geez, he's absolutely just a dream to own. Like, he's absolutely fantastic. Like, 9 years old, I think he's upwards of 50 starts anyway. And just there's times there where you think, oh God, you know, coming to the end of the road from the odd time. But geez, he just comes back and surprises you again. Like, I don't know. I think you just these sort of horses, they're the ones that give people the interest. You know, when you're having that battle with some people saying, oh, these flat horses don't stick around long enough. While he mightn't be winning, I get as much satisfaction out of seeing Brando showing up well against younger progressive horses like that. and still holding his own. He's a real, real pleasure to watch. But Starman, I'm just interested in reading comments there surrounding where he might go, you know, suggesting that, you know, he might stay in training as a five-year-old, considering there's not much for him in terms of ground preferences. I'm a little bit disappointed that he's so hamstrung by the ground. You know, ultimately, he is effective on it. I know he's absolutely at his best on a quick surface. But just, you know, you'd like to see a little bit, you know, more. And I don't know if you go globetrotting. I know it's difficult during the pandemic, but, you know, you see across the world where we've had horses that have competed everywhere and they've made it possible. So I'm sure if it is possible, Ed Walker and his team will make it happen. But, you know, whether it be Hong Kong, etc., or a Breeders' Cup or whatever it might be, getting onto a quick surface. You know, I thought what he showed at Newmarket on the July course, I thought he was absolutely the real deal. So I was a bit disappointed, but maybe he's just one of those that is very dependent in terms of delivering an optimum performance on getting quick ground.
I get the indication Mark thinks he should achieve more before we should be lauding him as the next best thing. You spoke about international racing there, Mark, and that's good timing because on Saturday we saw Alpinista win the Grosser Preis von Berlin in Germany for Luke Morris and Sir Mark Prescott. And even earlier in the show, Chris referenced Scaletti winning Group 1 really easily in Germany recently. Do you think our horses should target these races more?
It's something on face value I have thought about, but just it was interesting. I think Laura King, Dubai Racing's Laura King, had a tweet up there not long ago where she was pretty much questioning that as to, you know, Scaletti's a super horse, you know, but you look at some of the opposition he was taking on for a top-level race, and you'd wonder why more aren't trying to exploit it. But David Menizier responded, say, as much as, you know, Munich is a fantastic course where that was, you know, he said the prize money is just a little bit too low once you've paid the tax on it. And I think the phrase that he used was something to the extent that it was a stepping stone rather than the end goal, based on those financial circumstances. But, like, I mean, from a black tie point of view, if I had a mare that I was looking to try and get placed, while I'm not in any way underestimating that there isn't quality in the German racing by any means, you know, if I'm looking at trying to get placed maybe in an Irish Group 1 or a German Group 1, it's something you'd certainly look at. And I think even Jessica Harrington last year tried it as well, running Silence Please in the German Oaks. I think she was fourth. Mark Johnson obviously has made hay over there as well. So, you know, it's something I absolutely love, international competition. I think it's fantastic for racing, and the more of it, the better. But there must be logistical challenges, whether it be prize money, tax, etc. They seem to be getting in the way somewhat.
And obviously now with Brexit as well. Sorry, go on, Chris.
I was just going to say, Maddie, I know that Hugo Palmer wanted to run one in the German Guineas a while back, and I think William Haggis had a horse that had a sort of ideal race marked out for him in Germany. But both of them decided against it because at that stage of the season, with the COVID regulations in Germany, it was basically made fairly clear that runners from Britain were not welcome unless you were prepared to go through all sorts of hoops that that just made it unattractive. I think you essentially had to hand over the horse at Calais, and neither of those Newmarket trainers were prepared to do that. But evidently, you know, things must have been smoothed over in time for Alpinista to go over. I thought it was one of those uncompromising rides from Luke Morris. He's basically closed the door on the German favourite Torquato Tasso, you know, not long after the turn for home. And that's proved decisive because, you know, that one has come home real strong in second place. But it was too late, and Alpinista was gone. So, I mean, you know, Luke's not, you know, your Steve Cawthon kind of smooth, balletic style of jockey. But, you know, he definitely got the job done that day.
He did. Pardon me, by the way, that Grosser Preis von Berlin was on Sunday. The race that I was talking about that is on Saturday, or was on Saturday, is the Saratoga Derby. Of course, it was won by State of Rest, only a maiden winner, Mark, but he netted a fair bit of prize money on John Velasquez to beat Bolshoi Ballet and the local contingent. What did you make of his performance?
Jeez, it was a wow performance, wasn't it? Like, I couldn't see it coming. I know our own Tom Collins is very sweet, and I have to give a lot of credit to him because this was a fair old price. He was very, very confident in the lead up to this, I'm told. So hats off to him. But again, as my colleague Brian Sheeran pointed out in today's paper, Joseph O'Brien, there's absolutely no flies on him when it comes to international campaign. And, you know, we saw it with Baron Samedi, who I memorably backed when he got beat at Tremor off America in the 60s. And I don't think he's looked back since. You know, I've watched him with gritted teeth, but with great admiration for what he's done since. You know, he went over and won a valuable race at Belmont, and he nearly could have landed another one as well, Thundering Knights on the same card. And obviously goes over again with this, and we know his exploits in Australia as well. You know, he successfully ran them in France as well to pick up good prize money. You know, he's just has his finger on the pulse here, it seems, when it comes to picking out these targets and identifying the right sort of horses that you can travel, because it doesn't suit all horses, obviously, but this horse as well. Like, he was a second run after a pretty decent break, and you know, his juvenile form last season mightn't have been totally wow, but there were hints there that he could be quite good. But did I see this coming? Absolutely not. I was very, very impressed. I think Bolshoi Ballet, ultimately, this sort of track, a little bit sharper than Belmont last time, over a mile, or an extended mile and one, I think it was, that just might be a little bit sharp for him. I think they tried to go and be aggressive on him, in the sense they weren't going to let themselves get trapped in a pocket, and I can appreciate that. But, you know, I think it just might have caught him out late on. I think he'd be more comfortable maybe stepping back up in trip, maybe on a little bit more of a style of track over here, let's say a Curragh or something like that, or a Leopardstown, where he might be able to relax more. I was disappointed with Cadillac too. I thought he would run better. I thought that was the sort of race he'd show up better in, but possibly he might have bounced. You never know. It was obviously the international stakes of the Curragh that was coming off the back of what, 230 something days off. So I'd give him another chance potentially, but I was disappointed at face value with Cadillac.
Okay, thanks very much, Mark. Now, this podcast had a very international flavour, hasn't it? And that's going to continue, because this week's highlight is the Prix de Haras de la Fresne de la Buffard and Jacques Lamarois on Sunday. Let's talk about that, including Palace Pier, after this.
Be sure to watch Racing Post Live with Betfair for racing reaction, tips and discussion, live every Saturday afternoon on the Racing Post YouTube channel.
Okay, let's delve into another Group 1 then. And over in France on Sunday, we have the Jacques Lamarois, only the shortened version this time, but very kindly, Mark and Chris praised my attempt at that previous pronunciation. The horse it surrounds usually, well, last year anyway, was Palace Pier, and he looks set to go in again for John and Thady Gosden. Some interesting horses engaged. We're not sure exactly who's going to turn up at this stage. The likes of Bayeed perhaps could go elsewhere, but Alpine Star, Poetic Flair, who's danced every dance, maybe he's going to turn up here again. And Mother Earth, for Aidan O'Brien, the pre-Rothschild winner, could turn out relatively quickly as well. This could have an interesting shape to it, Chris. Is it fair to say that it all hinges on Palace Pier? What have you made of his performances so far this season?
Well, first of all, you want to see who turns up. I mean, there's a long list of big names there. I think, you know, if we get even like a third of them, it's going to be a fine race. Palace Pier, deeply impressive, you'd have to say. Okay, so with the Lockinge Lady Bothorpe in second place, at that point you'd be going, well, you know, what does she do for the form? But, you know, now she's a Group 1 winner in her own right. And then he's gone on and followed up in the Queen Anne. Only been beaten the one time, and that was on desperate ground. And I don't think it's going to be desperate ground. I'm looking at the forecast for Deauville in the next few days. I think they've got rain today, but not huge amounts. And then it's going to be sort of the kind of holiday making weather for the next 6 days. So, I'd say that, you know, you're probably looking at good, maybe even good to firm by the time we get to Sunday. And, that's going to be right up Palace Pier's cup of tea. But, you know, the last five runnings of this race have been won by three-year-olds. It's a good time of year for three-year-olds with that weight for age that they get. I think you have to be pretty interested in any from the classic generation that turn up to take him on. The one that's at the front of my mind, I have to say, is Poetic Flair, you know, Jim Bolger's horse, that run another big race at Goodwood. If he gets a drier surface here, he'd be a danger to everything.
It's interesting as well, he's got Max Winnie in there, the Irish 2000 Guineas winner, but indeed Poetic Flair, you'd think, is his number one.
Well, Mark, he's got all the bases covered there, doesn't he? If it pours with rain, then Max Winnie goes.
Exactly. We wouldn't expect any less from Jim Bolger. Mark, I do want to talk to you about Alpine Star, disappointing on her comeback recently, or maybe not. What was your view on it?
On ratings, it was a race that she had to win, and you'd have to be disappointed. But you'd just read between the lines that she'd been off for 292 days. You'd assume that there must have been some hold up at some stage there with her. So you maybe have to allow a little bit for her to have needed the run in normal circumstances, and then maybe add in that it hasn't been complete plain sailing for her, and I'd be a little bit more forgiving. But yeah,
she lifted as well, didn't she, in the market beforehand?
Yeah, yeah. And I think she should have won ultimately, and I was disappointed she didn't, but I'm not totally dismissing her. Ultimately, though, I think that, you know, this will come down to ground, and I do think it's a shootout between Poetic Flair and Palace Pier, but it's on different ground, there will be different outcomes. Like Palace Pier with an ease in the ground, you know, I know he was beaten last year with an ease at Ascot, but geez, it was a bog here last year, and he was brilliant. And I think with an ease in the ground, he is a very, very effective horse, whereas Poetic Flair, like when he got genuine quick ground at Ascot, the performance he put up, like I'm not sure that the Palace Pier can deal with Poetic Flair if the ground is quick. But likewise, I don't think if there's a bit of a dig in it, I think Palace Pier eats him up as well. So it's going to come down to that for me. As Chris has touched on with Max Winnie there in terms of ground covering the bases with Jim Bulger, like with an ease in the ground, he's a proper horse as well. Like, I mean, you look at what he won the Vertem Futurity last year on at Doncaster. That was very, very testing. And we know at Deauville it can be very changeable too. I wouldn't rule him out, and he's probably going to be a price as well off the back of his two runs in the Derby at Epsom and the Curragh as well. I wouldn't be ruling him out in a hurry if we got knees in the ground, but if it is quick, give me Poetic Flair all day long.
So we'll be watching that weather forecast. Then let's clarify this week's naps.
This will not be beaten.
Chris, I'll let you go first, seeing as it's your postcast debut. Hopefully we'll get you back in the very near future. Who are you pinning your hopes on to win in this week upcoming?
I hope I'm not going to get brickbats for giving you two names. I mean, Poetic Flair would be the nap at this early stage, but one I'm interested in, I couldn't be sure where he's going to turn up, is Baradar. He's got a couple of entries. We've been talking about State of Rest and that form from last year. So State of Rest was fifth in the Vertem Futurity at Donny. And of course, Max Sweeney's won that race. You know, form is starting to work out really well. Baradar was third. Obviously, this year hasn't gone straightforwardly because he didn't turn up anywhere until the middle of July and ran disappointing that day. But you could forgive him that. And it might be that he drops down into Group 3 company at Salisbury on Thursday, and that the Sovereign Stakes they have down there. He could go in the Hungerford as well at the weekend. I think, you know, if he turns up anywhere this week, he could be really interesting for Roger Berrien, who's suddenly firing on all cylinders.
Okay, what time is the Sovereign Stakes, just in case he goes there?
So that is Salisbury Thursday at 4:05.
There we are, and that's Baradar for Chris Cook, his nap of the week. And Mark, what about you?
I'll take a flyer on one at a big price that's out of the handicap, so we're really asking for trouble. But in the McHenry Cup handicap, it's the last race at Gorn on Wednesday, the 8:05. I'll give a chance to Tyria Music. Ridden by Jamie Powell, his £10 claim is going to be a help to offset the fact she's wrong at the weights. But I think if you rule out her run last time when it just seemed that she didn't take to cheek pieces at all, I don't know whether resenting them would be the correct phrase, but they haven't put them on here, and it was just an inexplicable run, to be quite honest. She just never really fired. I'd be willing to give her another chance. And, you know, ultimately, she's pretty unexposed. The form of her Curragh fourth previously got a nice boost as well through Azalea winning readily at Cork on Saturday. And I think in general, she is one that has an awful lot more upside to her than some of the rivals she's coming across here. You know, that trip is going to be right up her street as well, an extended mile and four. You know, Jessica Harrington, it's been a little bit of an in and out season at times for her, but she had three winners at the Galway Festival and she got three winners over the weekend as well. I just think things are beginning to turn a little bit there in terms of consistency, and I wouldn't be surprised if she ran well at a price. So Tyria Music for me in the 8:05 at Gorn on Wednesday.
I like the sound of that, a big price one. I do have sympathy for you both, you know, because I was on Nick Luck's podcast last week and had to pick a winner of that day's racing, and ultimately I failed, and you guys have to pick through the whole week of action. So no mean feat, but I very much like the argument made for both of those cases, so thanks very much. That's all we've got time for today, though. But if you enjoy, please make sure you rate, review and subscribe wherever you are listening to us from. And as usual, the team on Friday will be back to have a look at those excellent cards coming up this weekend. Best of luck with your bets this week, and we'll see you again soon.